Serious allegations of sexual assault have been made against Joe Biden in the last week or so by a former staffer, Tara Reid. The story was first broken by Ryan Grimm on The Intercept and then taken up by progressive outlets such as Democracy Now! And The Hill's Rising. But for a long time, the only thing heard from the mainstream media was crickets. A few minor articles in print, but nothing on cable news so far. Crickets has also been the sound coming from the Democratic leadership. But what has been perhaps more surprising is that there's been virtually no reaction from such feminist standard bearers in the Senate as Kirsten Gillibrand and Elizabeth Warren. Gillibrand has made the fight against sexual harassment and assault a touchstone of her career as a politician. And Warren, who savaged Michael Bloomberg, justifiably in my opinion, on the debate stage for his treatment of women, made feminism a key value of her presidential campaign. Moreover, the slew of senators who pressured their colleague Al Franken to resign when he was accused of sexual harassment have also been silent. That's what my guest Branko Marcetic found when he reached out to those senators, like Gillibrand, to get their reaction to the Tara Reid accusation. He wrote a comparison of the treatment of Franken versus Biden in a recent article in Jacobin. For top Democrats, Joe Biden is no Al Franken. Marcetic is the author of a just-released book about Joe Biden, Yesterday's Man. We interviewed him about that book several weeks ago. Well, Branko Marcetic, welcome back to Writer's Voice.
Thanks for having me back.
We just recently spoke with you about your book, Yesterday's Man, which is about Joe Biden, and you've continued to write about Biden in the Democratic primary now. There's been a major development in the last week, and that was that Tara Reid, a former staffer of Biden's, alleged that in 1993 he pushed her up against a wall and basically groped and assaulted her with his fingers. He raped her, it seemed, according at least to Reid's description of the incident. This article is about contrasting the reaction of Democratic senators to Tara Reid's accusation versus their treatment of former Al Franken, who they pressured to resign from the Senate when he was accused of sexual harassment.
Well, what happened with Al Franken? He was a sitting senator who, at the sort of height of the kind of Me Too moment, for lack of a better term, there was first one woman who said that on a USO tour years earlier, Franken had tried to force a kiss on her and taken this kind of disturbing photo where he was kind of jokingly pretending to grope her breasts, and that became a big story. And then a series of more women came out after that, women that Franken had met over the years, taken photos with and that kind of thing, who said similar things or said that he, you know, had groped them while they were taking a photo with him, and including a Senate staffer as well came out with an accusation. And what happened was that ultimately something like 35 senators, 32 of them Democrats and independents, came out and they said that Franken should resign. You know, these were unacceptable allegations. And yeah, basically, there was enough pressure put on Chuck Schumer, where Schumer said the same thing. And he, you know, threatened Franken with taking away some of his privileges and some of the committees that he was sitting on. And he left. Now there's this allegation. And so, you know, I suppose watched as there was complete silence around Tara Reid's allegation for two or three days, you know, from both the media and politicians. And I sort of went from the starting point of, well, all these senators really kind of made a big deal about coming out against Franken when it was politically maybe not convenient, but certainly at the time, you know, we had all these Me Too allegations, and that was certainly the way that the political landscape was looking, and they came out. So what are they going to say now when it's 3 years later, when, you know, it's another Democrat, another high-profile Democrat who's been accused? And so that's where I went from.
And in fact, there was a fair amount of even dismay on the part of, I think, a lot of rank-and-file Democrats to the pressure on Franken, which was intense, to resign because a lot of people felt his actions didn't rise to the condition of having to resign. could you contrast what he was accused of with what Biden is accused of, not just by Tara Reid, but in the past as well with women?
Yeah, in regards to how the Democratic electorate felt, I think there was a bit of a split. I think some people probably thought, you know, these things are maybe serious, but they should be investigated first. Some people said, well, you know, even if it's true, it's not enough to warrant him resigning. And then some people said, you know, this is the right thing to do on principle and on moral and ethical lines. What Franken was accused of was groping and trying to kiss people without consent, which is obviously very but, you know, what Biden's accused of now by Tara Reid is a lot more serious because it involves, you know, penetration without consent. It's, you know, as you said, it rises to the level of rape, certainly sexual assault, and I would say a much more serious case than Franken's. And it comes a year or nearly a year after Biden had had other accusations leveled against him by women, including Lucy Flores, and actually including Tara Reid herself, who wasn't ready at that point to tell her full story, you know, wasn't quite feeling up to it at that point. And these allegations were not as serious as what Biden's facing now, and I would say probably less serious than what Franken was accused of. But it was along the lines of basically that women felt that, you know, he was maybe taking liberties by you know, he would caress their hair or put his face in their hair or, you know, stroke them, put his hand on their thigh, things like that. You know, sort of things that very much align with the kind of touchy, feely, you know, friendly Uncle Joe reputation that Biden has. But for these women, they felt that it was across the line and made them feel uncomfortable. And, you know, Biden apologizing said, you know, I didn't realize this is how they felt. And, you know, I have to get used to these changing social mores and everything. And so he's sort of avoided doing that since. Interestingly, though, you know, I spoke to Tara Reid as well just the other day. She was saying, you know, that's very much how the behavior with her started before he had allegedly assaulted her. She says that he had done very similar things, you know, kind of touching her and sort of saying things and, you know, all this kind of stuff that doesn't rise to a level of assault, but, you know, she thought was a little bit questionable at the time or didn't feel entirely comfortable about. And then it sort of crossed over. And, you know, she kind of, what she said to me was she thought that this, it wasn't him being touchy-feely and that kind of thing. It was more that it was a form of domination, that by touching her, he was making it clear that everyone was sort of around him, kind of belonged to him. He could sort of, you know, move them and do what he wanted with them. You know, that's what she told me.
And that's pretty typical, I think, of the kinds of the spectrum of sexual harassment for men. I mean, Biden is not unusual in that.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a pattern that you hear very often. I mean, it usually, this kind of thing starts off with little things testing the boundaries and it kind of balloons from there, I suppose. And you know, if that certainly in the story that Tara Reid has told me and told others at this point, that seems to be the kind of pattern that's followed.
Yeah, so now let's talk about the reaction of the folks in the Senate toward Biden on this. You reached out to those who had, in fact, pressured Franken to resign, and prominent among them is Kirsten Gillibrand. You also reached out to Kamala Harris and Cory Booker. Gillibrand is she was popularly seen as having led the charge against Franken, saying that we need to rise to the occasion, not shrink away from it, even when it's hard. But she endorsed Biden a little over a week ago, saying he would be a champion for women. What was the reaction of her and her office when you reached out to them?
So I was given the number for what I was told was her communications director, and I ended up speaking to her press assistant. And I told her about these allegations, and, you know, I said I have these questions, and, you know, could they offer a response? And from the way that we talked about it, it didn't sound like they had been aware of the allegation beforehand. I don't know, but that was just the impression I got. And I said, you know, if it helps, I can send through the interview that Tara Reid had done with Rising, with Crystal Ball and Rising. And they said, you know, that'll be great. And so I did that. I emailed them on the email that her press assistant gave me. I followed up not once but twice with the press assistant, spoke to her directly, and I said, you know, are you going to be able to give a response to this by Monday? And she said, you know, we're not sure. I'm going to take it back to the team and we'll see. And then I called one more time, you know, before the piece was going to go up. And I said, you know, it's going to go up on Tuesday morning. So if you were planning on sending a statement, you still have a bit of time. And, you know, she said, okay. I also emailed the communications director multiple times and I got nothing. You know, and as you say, Kristen Gillibrand, she, you know, not only led the charge on Franken resigning, but really built her political identity, especially going into 2020, not just around that particular case, but also around fighting for sexual assault survivors generally. She's been, you know, the leading senator on trying to get sexual assault survivors in the military to be able to have their stories heard, to be able to see some justice, you know, from what happened to them in the military. She's been pushing that for years. And of course, you know, she said in subsequent interviews, because there was actually a lot of backlash that she faced for leading the charge on Franken, Democratic donors, wealthy Democratic donors, they were not happy about this, as you can imagine. And, you know, it may have cost her politically in 2020, but she said, you know, I don't care. I have no regrets. The only thing I would have changed, I would have done it sooner if I had the chance. And, you know, now Senator Gillibrand really had an opportunity to, you know, show that this wasn't just a political calculation to, you know, win points in advance of running for president, but that, you know, this is really a deeply held principle that she believes in, that you know, crosses partisan lines. And the fact that, you know, her office knows about this, there's no way that this hasn't gone back to the Senator. At this point, it's been covered by a fair few mainstream publications, mainstream news outlets. And so, you know, I think it's very clear that she and all these other senators I got in touch with are choosing to stay silent.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the other senators. There's Kamala Harris, who, in fact, is one of Biden's top three choices, we hear, for VP. When she called for Franken to step down, she said that sexual harassment and misconduct should not be allowed by anyone and should not occur anywhere. What's been her reaction?
Nothing. I wasn't able to reach anyone to speak in her office, but I left them multiple voice messages. I sent emails to her communications director as well. I've heard nothing back. And that's the thing. I mean, I got in touch with 29 senators, 29 of these people that had originally called for Franken to resign. A few of them are now not in Congress anymore, so that's sort of why the numbers changed. But I got in touch with all of them. I sent them all multiple emails. I left voice messages for all of them. And the only person I heard back, so the only person not only just to simply have a comment on this was Sherrod Brown from Ohio. And he sent me a comment saying something along the lines of, I believe every woman deserves to have her story heard and I will always fight for that right. So, you know, kind of a generic statement, but at the very least, there was some sort of response. Whereas all these people like Harris, who made a big deal about, you know, again, when it was politically convenient, when they wanted to show that they were willing to stand up to even people in their own parties, you know, and all preparing their presidential runs, when they sort of stood on this, they've all stayed silent now. And, you know, another one that I really have to call out here is Elizabeth Warren. You know, I think she probably, you know, after Senator Gillibrand, she really centered women's issues and issues around harassment and treatment of women in her presidential campaign. You know, we remember at the start of 2020, Warren, or people in her staff, accused Bernie Sanders of saying that he believed that a woman can win the presidency. Then, you know, she's since then attacked Sanders multiple times for the fact that people who claim to be his online supporters, or simply just people who are on Twitter, toxic personalities on Twitter that may not even necessarily have to do anything with Sanders, but I just sort of have been lumped in with Sanders supporters. She said that he has to take responsibility for that. She also got a lot of political capital out of attacking Mike Bloomberg for his very long record of misogyny. That was this thing that was sort of seen as a way for her to build up her momentum going into Super Tuesday to sort of attack him on these issues. And she had said, actually, to Rachel Maddow, the reason that she had attacked him at these debates was she was trying to end his candidacy, because she said he was the riskiest candidate that the Democratic Party could have run, because his past treatment of women meant that if he did become the Democratic candidate, he could not launch the same attacks against Trump. He had no standing. And so all of this, you know, would lead one to believe that Senator Warren would have spoken out about this. You know, I know it's just one allegation, but Senator Warren herself said when Mike Bloomberg, over the allegation that, Mike Bloomberg had told a pregnant staffer to, quote, kill it, referring to the pregnancy, you know, people at the time had said, well, what's your evidence for this? And she said, it's the woman's word. So, you know, Senator Warren has made it clear that she believes that a single woman's word, and by the way, the story has been backed up by Tara Reid's brother and friend, but she has said that a woman's word is enough for her. And you would think if Biden is the leading contender right now, and Warren has not endorsed anyone, would she not be also concerned that Biden now, who is very much running explicitly on his character, he's not really running on really any issues, but really just sort of to heal the nation's soul and just replace Trump with someone who's not sort of a vile far-right figure. Would she not be concerned that Biden himself could not launch attacks against Trump's many, many terrible sexual assaults and his awful treatment of women, given that, you know, he can have this allegation and he definitely will have this allegation thrown back at him? And of course, I heard nothing. And the last thing I'll say is Tara Reid herself, I've not been able to confirm this, but Tara Reid has said that she had gotten in touch with Senator Harris and Senator Warren when the press basically ignored her and sort of told them that she had more to say and, you know, that if they could help her out. And Warren told her that Warren's office sent her a contact form and said, get in touch with a local representative. Harris just didn't reply. So, you know, very much when in the public light, these senators are kind of standing up and making themselves seem like champions of women and champions of sexual assault survivors. In private, when there aren't any cameras around, it doesn't seem like they're willing to go that far.
You know, Biden, aside from these allegations, and aside from the, quote, handsiness, unquote, you know, the inappropriate touching of women before, has a fraught history on gender issues more generally. I wonder if you could talk about, you know, his history on abortion restrictions, Anita Hill, where he clearly blocked witnesses and treated her quite shabbily, for which he has not apologized. So talk about his history and then why that becomes really problematic for the Democratic Party going forward.
One of the ironies of this race is that the narrative has been that, you know, Bernie Sanders, who is the only person now running against Biden, you know, has this reputation, or his supporters do, for being toxic against women, that he doesn't care about women's issues. Actually, the National Organization for Women, they had said earlier, they had urged Warren not to endorse Sanders because they said he's never done anything for women. You know, sort of a tacit endorsement of Joe Biden. And what's ironic is that the National Organization for Women, as well as many feminist groups and women's groups, have long butted heads with Biden over his stance on, for example, abortion. Biden himself said many times in interviews during the 70s that he didn't believe that, you know, there was a sort of that women had a right to say what happened to their bodies when it came to abortion, that men should have a say as well. He blocked, you know, for example, he wanted to block any state help, any state funding that would go to help women get abortions, because his stance was, well, you know, if we take the government out of the abortion question, then that means they can't ban it and they can't support it as well. Although, having said that, Biden then also supported a bill that would have, the Hatch Amendment, in fact, Orrin Hatch, that would have essentially, you know, helped to ban abortion in various states. So, you know, he didn't always keep to that anyway. There was the fact that a lot of these groups were very butted heads with him through the 80s because he let through a series of hard right justices, including Anthony Kennedy, a man that Biden personally recommended to Ronald Reagan. He said, this is a conservative that I can support for the Supreme Court. And then through his confirmation hearing, despite the fact that Kennedy had lots of red flags in his record, and, you know, including potentially, you know, sort of discriminating against homosexuals in the Navy, I believe. He had been to part of country clubs where they didn't let women and African-Americans join. He had also privately told Jesse Helms they didn't, you know, believe in the right to abortion. Biden didn't ask him any of these things. He just sort of let him go through. You know, he was sort of bored during the hearings. He said, you know, hopefully we can just get out of here as soon as possible. And he was accused by someone in the hearings, him and the rest of the committee, of playing patty cake with Kennedy. And then what did Kennedy do? Kennedy helped the newly right-wing Supreme Court gut abortion rights in the early 90s, opening up the door to all these abortion restrictions, these little sort of new abortion restrictions that we've seen, you know, that aren't abortion restrictions by name, but basically that's their effect. And then, you know, beyond that, Biden, until last year, he supported the Hyde Amendment. He had also voted for what was called the Partial Birth Amendment. Under Bush, he was the only Democrat in 2007 running for president to still support that particular measure. And so, you know, Biden's really been on the other side of a lot of liberal feminists on a lot of these issues, and not just abortion, but also, you know, things like welfare reform, which was bitterly opposed by these groups. So it is ironic now that he, you know, after years, I think we've seen after Trump's election, where people were so disgusted at Trump's behavior, you know, his casual misogyny on the campaign trail, you know, his history with women, the accusations against him, all of this stuff. It sort of led to this, or I guess sped up this realignment where the Democratic Party had increasingly become a party of women. Women voters were more and more flocking to it. And, you know, that was really the strategy of the party, and it still is the idea of, in the last congressional race, it was something like the historically high number of women had run for office, and most of them were Democrats. So we've heard all this rhetoric since Trump, you know, about how the importance of believing women and about centering women's voices and all this kind of thing. And now the person that they've picked as a standard bearer is very much, you know, if you look at these issues, he's a dinosaur on these issues and has been on the wrong side of history when it comes to all of these things that the party is trying to center now. And on top of that, there's now this, I think, very credible sexual assault allegation against him that either Democrats are going to have to just flatly say this, you know, that Tara Reid is lying and just close ranks around Biden, or, well, I'm not really sure what their strategy is going to be otherwise. But either way, I think it's going to hurt both the credibility on the issue of sexual assault and on women's issues. And I think it's just going to hurt the ability for any future survivor to come out, because now it's becoming a partisan issue, because they couldn't stand up to their own Democratic frontrunner when it counted. And so Republicans will always be able to say, well, you know, you always say believe women, but actually, clearly, this is just a partisan attack line. So it's bad on many, many levels, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in some ways is the key takeaway that I had from your article, that this makes it really difficult for women, for the Me Too movement. I mean, women who have just been starting in being able to be believed about sexual assault and sexual harassment, to go forward on this. And you know, I'd like to point out that there is actually video of Gloria Steinem praising Bernie Sanders for his long history of supporting women. So I guess the last thing I want to say is, what the heck is the Democratic Party thinking?
I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, this election is really about Bernie Sanders in many ways. I mean, the reason why they've gone around Biden, there's a very little enthusiasm for Biden among voters, even among donors. Biden was running out of money late last year because donors were thinking this guy's not going to be able to make it. He's going to be a poor candidate. They started going to people like Pete Buttigieg. And Biden's in this position because after South Carolina, he was really the only viable vehicle for people in the party who are opposed to Bernie Sanders to move to be able to block him from winning the nomination. And so they've, you know, what they've ended up with, and this really shows you how much they value basically beating Sanders over actually beating Trump. They have ended up in the position where they've had to go with this guy who not only has this really long, terrible record that is completely out of step with where the party and its voters are today, that looks like he will not be able to enthuse. If you look at the polling, will not inspire enthusiasm among rank and file Democratic voters, let alone the young voters that were so key to Obama capturing the coalition that he did in 2008. And a guy who, you know, has, with a lackluster response to this this current crisis that we're in, a guy who is stumbling through interviews, doesn't appear to know what's in his own plan, is openly reading off a sheet on TV, and now is in a position where he has been credibly accused of sexual assault. And who knows if that's the last of it. We'll have to see, but there may be more women that come out to tell this story. And if so, that puts Biden and the party in a very, very weak position. But again, you have to ask yourself, based on their behavior, what has been the party's biggest priority here? Has it really been to pick the candidate they think is strongest to go up against Trump? Or has it been to pick a candidate that will help them just block Sanders from ending up the nominee and winning the presidency? And to me, I think the answer is pretty obvious.
So I guess I'd like to ask you one last thing. The corporate media for a while largely evaded covering this story. Time did finally mention it. Vox, I think, did as well. But it still hasn't made it to the newspapers of record or to cable news, CNN and MSNBC.
It's either been not covered, or what I'm seeing now is, and this is particularly shameful because these are the kind of liberal feminist outlets that have really led the charge when it comes to, you know, Republicans like Christine Blasey Ford and Trump. They've talked about, you know, whenever there's a new accuser, they do a story. And in this case, they've taken a completely different tack, which is, you know, outlets like Jezebel, and I've seen Amanda Marcotte at Salon and some other people, you know, mostly online on Twitter. They've sort of made the point of instead of talking about the allegation, they've talked about how the allegation has been mishandled and how it needs to be, we need to be more careful when we report about these allegations and so on and so forth. There's all this kind of concern trolling, for lack of a better word, about the process of this, you know, concerns that never existed. For example, last year when E. Jean Carroll, she leveled this accusation against Trump that he raped her, you know, some decades back. I can't remember when exactly. And, you know, people were rightly saying at the time, well, why isn't this getting any media attention? And there's very little difference between the Reid allegation and the Carroll allegation, because in both cases, it's something that happened decades ago. It's something that really is based on the word of one woman. In both cases, two people close to her corroborated the story in the sense that they said, well, yeah, she told us this at the time. So, and you know, this was treated unquestionably as a very legitimate and credible allegation. When Carroll did it, there was none of this, ooh, well, you know, people really should have gone back and checked everything that Carroll's saying. And, oh, you know, we need to wait and wait for all the reporting to happen before we write about this at all. No, people right off the bat were talking about it. So that's been a really, I wouldn't even say failure. It's not a failure. It's a willful decision to play down this allegation. What's going to happen? I don't know. You know, I've heard different things. I've heard that there are some outlets, you know, some actual mainstream outlets, print outlets that are looking into this. Tara Reid says that she was contacted by, I think, the Washington Post. But then the question is how they're going to treat it, because she says that they also asked her a lot of questions about, you know, her financial background and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, the Biden campaign basically sent a signal to the media. They said every woman deserves to have a story heard and every journalist needs to vet that accusation. Sort of basically saying, all right, well, she said this, now have at it. You know, pick through her past, find things that you can do to delegitimize her. So, I mean, I think if the Post or the New York Times reports about this, then it's impossible for something like CNN and MSNBC to keep ignoring it. When that's going to happen, you know, I don't know. The whole thing is very, very peculiar. And again, completely different to how every other accusation over the past few years has been treated, where, you know, even if it hasn't been vetted, people will at least say, well, this person was accused. And actually, I should say, I mean, she was vetted to an extent. I mean, Ryan Grimm spoke to her brother and her friend, and they had confirmed that she told them this at the time. So in a sexual assault case, I'm not really sure what else, a decades-old sexual assault case, I'm not really sure what else you can go on. So that's basically my thoughts. I don't know what's going to happen.
I watched her extended interview with Crystal Ball on Rising on the Hill website. I found her quite credible. I mean, as a woman who has, you know, I'm sure like the vast majority of other women, has been a victim of sexual harassment, what she said sounded true.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to her for a little over an hour the other day, and I found her very credible as well. You know, like, she has a very consistent story, and I know that there is a, I mean, it's intangible, but there's a sense that you get when you talk to people, you can sort of feel like they're holding something back, or, you know, maybe not telling you the whole thing. And I didn't really feel that way with her. I felt like she was really telling me, you know, the honest truth. But we'll see if the media just decides to, you know, completely destroy her. You know, I hope not, because that would be really, really tragic for her to, you know, muster up the courage to do this decades later and then be punished for it.
Yes. Well, Branko Marcetic, thank you so much for coming back to Writer's Voice to talk about this issue. It really is an important one, beyond just the particulars, for what it really says about the state of our politics today. Thanks again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That was Branko Marcetic of Jacobin Magazine. He is the author of a recently released book about Joe Biden called Yesterday's Man. Go to writersvoice.net to listen to our interview with him about that book.